Hello, my darlings. It is such a joy to be back here. I cannot tell you how much I love doing this podcast. Anyway, I'm super excited today to introduce you to my friend River Ayla, who is joining me from Mexico in this specific episode. And we are talking all things identity. And the reason we're talking all things identity is because when I heard about the number of identities that River had moved through in her life, my mind was kind of blown. I thought that I had done a pretty big shift in terms of moving from banking to what I do now. And then in conversation with River, I was like, wow, okay, there is a whole other level to this. And identity work is so powerful when it comes to moving through stages of life, moving through transitions, moving through career changes, moving through ends of relationships, like all kinds of stuff. And this episode has got so many nuggets of wisdom around how to do that in a healthy, forward-moving, like heart-centered way. So I'm super excited to share this with you. I hope you glean as much from the conversation as I did. But to give you a little bit of an introduction to River, she is the founder of Quantum Recalibration, an expert in subconscious rewiring and energetic recalibration. Her work has reached thousands through one-on-one sessions and audio activations, offering channeled insights that catalyze expanded states of worth and limitlessness. She's also a nomad, author, and singer-songwriter, adventuring with internal and external landscapes. River has also very kindly gifted all of you guys a super powerful free audio that you can download in the show notes of this episode if you want to dive deeper into her work. I hope you guys enjoy. I came out of this conversation very much expanded in what it really means to move through identity, and to really anchor into deeper self-worth and possibility of expansion. So I'm sending you all so much love. I will speak with you very soon and enjoy. Beautiful. So we're back, and I am so honored to have you here. And I'm honestly, when I was preparing to record this episode, I was like so excited about so many of the things that you shared in your like prep notes, because you have been on a journey. And I often think for myself, like having been in investment banking and then quitting and moving to Mexico and going to Cape Town and then coming back to London, I often think of myself as someone who's lived many lives. And then
We've
I
actually
see
had some
yours.
similar lives.
Oh, yeah. When you were saying you were a corporate high flyer and then you were an activist and you're a healer and an energy worker, I was like, wait, how? So I guess my first question is like, how the hell did that happen?
How does anything happen? I felt a pull to something that didn't make a lot of sense. And then I did it, and I did it for a while. And I tried on that life like people try on clothes in dressing rooms
What
or,
was the life? What was the
rent the
life you were trying
runway.
on? Yeah.
I've tried on a lot of different lives. So I was partying in different international cities. I was an academic. I was very involved in the music industry. I was a management consultant at a very prestigious firm. I was a solo backpacker. I was a queer activist. I was, on any given day, I could be staying at the Four Seasons or I could be sleeping on a hardwood floor. So I have tried a lot of different types of living on this planet.
I'm like so obsessed with this when you talk about it. And do you mind if I share your age? It's
Absolutely.
okay. So you're 37 and you have managed to fit all of that into your still relatively short adult life. And when you said you felt a pull, did you feel a pull into each of those individual lives, or did you kind of fall into some of them and then move?
Both. I would say a lot of them were pretty accidental. So I didn't realize in university that we were supposed to choose a career that for some reason did not occur to me. I thought I was just supposed to go to a good one and then figure it out from there. And so I was scrambling and just somehow ended up in the field that I was in and stayed there because I really wanted to master it. a lot of the things that I did, I was looking around at what other people were doing and seeing their dreams and saying, oh, well, if they want that, then I'll give it a go, see what it's like, and do that. And so when I was in business school, people generally wanted two jobs. And depending on which field you were going into, they wanted this one or that one. And so I knew that I didn't want that field. So I was going to go for this field and I was going to get that job. And it was something that I hadn't even heard of prior to going to business school, but it was coveted. So I wanted it. So I decided to get it. And I learned pretty quickly that that's, I'm not going to say not the best way to live life, because I think it was very interesting and it got me a lot of really interesting experiences. But ultimately, someone else's dream is not your dream. And you're going to figure out at some point that living someone else's dream life is not as satisfying as living the things that you actually want. So I kept exploring, I kept wandering, I kept meandering. I kept observing. I call myself an alien anthropologist, because I feel like I'm constantly observing and watching people's patterns and seeing what makes people tick, seeing what their motivations and obstacles are, seeing how I can remove that, make them happier, make them, you know, more in line of what they actually want to do. And so what I was seeing a lot in anything that I was doing, you know, whether I was a consultant, whether I was an activist, whether what I'm doing now, you know, assisting humans in a very different way, is I'm constantly looking at what's missing. What are the gaps? What are they not seeing? What's not being brought to this conversation? And then speaking up about that and facilitating that so that they can have this bridge from one place to another between the things that they say they want and actually getting it. And so that was kind of a through line between absolutely everything that I did. And it's why I was able to achieve very quickly, because a lot of times people don't know what those gaps are. They don't know what the gaps are between what they say they want and what's actually missing, what's actually in the way, what's actually this inner conflict. And so no matter what the topic was that I was actually doing the exact same work, which is the work of all humans are humans. When people know that, they're a lot happier. There's a lot less fear. There's a lot less judgment. There's a lot less resentment. And when they really identify that, they feel connected, they feel uplifted. And then they stay in their own lane and move towards the things that they actually want. Stop worrying about other people's business, and then they get to be a lot more successful.
I love that so much, because I really resonated with what you shared about, like, you not really knowing what you didn't realize that you were trying to figure out a career, or that you should be figuring out a career. Like, exactly the same. I was at university, I had no idea, and then I fell out and I fell into banking, and none of it was aligned to who I was as a person. But I think that so many people live their life in that way of just trudging along and doing what they think they should be doing, and maybe don't hear that little inner nudge that you mentioned.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And that's why I kind of stopped myself, because I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to try out different routes. You know, like, let's say we're in the woods and we're looking at all these different paths, and we take a path and decide that, you know, maybe I don't want to continue down that path. Maybe I want to turn around and go try a new path. Like, I don't think it's a bad idea to explore and adventure and have different experiences. For me, I'm such a curious person that sometimes I just want to know. I just want to know what things are like. I want to know what I don't want. I want to know fully, so that I'm not sitting here wondering, oh, if only I had taken the well-trodden path, if only I had done what everyone else had done, if only I had really just put an effort and really tried to succeed, you know, in the conventional way. I don't have those questions anymore because I've already done it. And so now I get to be satiated, and my curiosity is like, okay, we can go somewhere else now.
Oh my God, this feels like you just sharing this satisfies like every part of my curiosity, because I am constantly the one that's like, there are millions of different options. And I actually at times I'm like, there's a data collection process to go through of like, okay, I've tried out lots of different things, and like, what
it's actually market research.
Totally. It is market research. But I wonder, because people often say to me, like, how the hell did you go from investment banking to doing coaching work? Like, that is quite a big shift. How do you go from like management consultant you mentioned to like energy work? That's like, yeah. I'm like pure type A management consultant. The management consultants I know probably would be like, energy work is complete crap. Like, how does that
happen? You'd be surprised. I converted a few, but while I was still there. So while I was still there, I was moonlighting as a shaman. So I was healing a ton of people, whether it was midnight or 3 a.m. or whenever I was finishing work, and whatever hotel room I was in and whatever country I was in, I was still doing that work. because for me, I found that the farther masculine I swung in Excel spreadsheets and finances or anything, the more I needed a feminine to balance, to keep my equilibrium. And so I was training with shamans and energy workers to get this sense of wholeness within me. But I actually think that it's super helpful and it informs everything that I do, because most of my clients are type A. They don't have a lot of patience for the woo-woo and the you know, the things that really aren't tangible and easily seen. And so I get to be that bridge for them to translate, to say, no, we're going to do this efficiently. We're only going to do the things that work. We're not just going to have things that are like, oh yeah, that felt better for a time. It was like a massage. No, we're going to have things that like actually change your life, that actually move you forward, that actually, you know, as we would say in corporate, move the needle. Like we're going to focus on efficiency and efficacy and all the things that I learned throughout my career. I was able to apply it directly to the type of work that I do. Everything that I do is structured, numbered, so that we actually get to be extremely focused and targeted and precise. And so all of that experience made me a much better facilitator, creator, and someone who is a catalyst for my clients.
And was there something that like, were you always interested in energy work? Like when you were young, like I know some people when they're children, they have like a sense that they're connected to that world, and other people get pulled into it because of life circumstances or something else. What happened for you?
I was not interested at all. What happened to me was I had been hustling so hard my whole life with the grinds and the grades and all the things, you know, ticking all the boxes, that at some point my body said no. And so I developed a chronic illness that was so debilitating that they were telling me that I was going to be on a feeding tube in the hospital, or that I just wouldn't be alive much longer. And I was 22 years old. And so I was watching Western doctors give up on me and Eastern doctors give up on me. Went to naturopathy, I went to homeopathy. And when everyone said, I don't know, we don't know what to do, I just kept saying, no, I don't accept this. There's a better way and I'm going to find it. So I kept going. And eventually someone said, I think you'd be a really good fit for energy work. Why don't you try it? And I wasn't interested, but I was like, you know what? I consider myself an adventurous person. I'll do anything once. Sure. So I met with a shaman who said, you have a gift. Let me train you. And I was like, no, I'm good. I don't need to, but just kept insisting over and over until I eventually did. And that was how all of this started. It's not how all of this ended. I will tell you that personally, I have experienced over 100 healing modalities, so I can speak to a lot of them. I've also trained the highest level in over 30 of them, because I found that there is no one size fits all. So wherever I saw gaps, I looked to fill those gaps, or I invented modalities that filled those gaps, because not all things work for all people in all situations at all times in their life. So I wanted to have some type of way to cause some kind of shift, no matter what was going on. And so that's why I kept learning all the different things. And I think that you can agree that this is a very market research type A way of looking at things. So I think that it actually all serves. I have no regrets.
I'm like so obsessed with how you're talking, because my brain works in such a similar way. Like I've trained in all these different things. And I'm like, wait, there's a gap there. I can feel there's a gap there. I now need to fill this gap by doing this other thing and training this other thing. Because it's like, to your point, like there are so many different healing modalities out there, and at times like there's so much beauty in a lot of them, but there are gaps in them, and there isn't a one size fits all, and there's not one thing that does everything.
Yeah, and it'd be great if there was, and for some people there might be, because they don't have as much karma as somebody else. They don't have as much things to work through with somebody else, and so it might be they just do one thing and they're good to go and that's it. But usually anyone who says this way is the only way and the only best way is saying that for marketing reasons, not because they actually believe it. I'm actually personally in contact with founders of several modalities that are very, very well known, and none of them believe that their way is the only way. They all think that there's a lot of different ways to do things, that nobody has 100% success rate. And so we're all being fed that there's one way to do things, whether it's one career in life, one path in life, or one healing modality that fixes everything. And that's actually not what's going on, because every person is so unique and everyone responds to something so uniquely that it's really about resonance and what actually connects for them in that moment.
Totally. It's funny because like, I've spoken to a lot of my friends that work in this field about this, because I think often there's this, you're often told from like a marketing perspective that it's like, you need to be saying that like your thing is the thing and da, da, da. And actually I look at my own journey over the years that I've been into this work, both personally and professionally. I have worked with so many different things. Like I've seen so many different healers, so many different energy workers, so many different coaches, therapists, like, because they all served a purpose at a specific point in my life. Some of them didn't resonate with me, and the ones that didn't resonate, I haven't trained in. The ones that did, I'm like, cool, I'll learn how to do this. But like, there's a beauty in recognizing that we're so multifaceted, and at different points in our lives, there are different things that are going to be serving us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still think that it all serves, you know, I look back to things that were really not helpful for me or for anyone around me. I would say that everyone had a net negative effect after having done it. And you know what? It made me a better facilitator because I learned what not to do, where people were falling through the cracks, what troubleshooting was. And so I really do think that it all compounded to add up to a better experience.
I want to go back to this idea that you've had like so many different lives in a relatively short period of time. And I want to talk a little bit about identity, because I used to do a lot of work with people around leaving high flying careers and stuff. And I recognize that a lot of the time, the piece that was really challenging was actually the identity death that comes with leaving that kind of thing. And in many ways, I'm still kind of going through that. I'm not sure if I ever fully grieve the like super high achieving version of me. She pops back periodically. And you said to me in your email, which really stuck with me, that addiction to an old identity isn't about a lack of desire, it's trauma. And I wonder for you, first of all, what identity did you cling to for the longest? And what was it that finally made you let it go?
There have been a bunch. I would say some of the hardest ones to shake were consultant. I was like, who am I if I'm not a consultant? I remember the first person that had never heard of my company blew my mind. I was like, you're not impressed with me? What a relief. That feels amazing. But then at some point I felt untethered and I was like, what now?
Yeah.
What do I do now? What about all the things that I've built for so many years that just aren't there anymore? What do I do with that? I would say that all the jobs that I've had, I've grieved leaving because they mattered to me. They were, you know, had their challenging moments, but I grew and I grew up in them. And so to separate from that was also separating at an identity level. I think that one identity that I had, because I did have PTSD, was traumatized. And so I had to separate this idea of being a traumatized person in order to get back to wholeness, because I couldn't take that with me.
And how do you do that? Like, I'm thinking about not only from the professional lens, but also, as you mentioned, like, I think if we go on a healing journey, sometimes there can be comfort in clinging on to the idea that like, I've still got all this work to do. I've still got like healing to do or whatever. And it can feel really scary to let go of the identity of having work to do. How do you let it go?
I always say that labels serve until they don't. So there was a time in my life where getting the label of PTSD was actually very validating for me, because I was like, oh, all these disparate symptoms of me, you know, jumping at loud noises and things like that, it's something that other people have experienced. And so that means that there is some kind of way out. It's not just, you know, me losing it. It's okay. This is a known thing. But at some point it became a cap and I couldn't move through it. And so I always say that if an identity is ever preventing you from doing something or being something that you actually want, that's when it's time to shed it and it's time to move on. Because even if it helped you before, even if there's a ton of secondary gains, you know, victim status, thought leadership, anything that is a reason to stay, community, commiseration with other, misery loves company, right? There's going to be reasons to stay. But if what you ultimately want is beyond that label, beyond that identity, that's when it's got to go. And for me, every single identity that I've shed, whether it was, you know, we could say it a negative identity like that one, or a positive identity that I've had that many people thought were admirable and amazing and they really wanted to prop it up, I let go of those ones too. Each time it felt like, especially the good ones, it felt like I was in a crab shell and I outgrew it. And so I had to take off the old crab shell, and I kept trying to fit myself back into it and cram myself back into it, but it wouldn't fit. It was too small. I couldn't do it anymore because I could not grow and stay at the same time.
God, that place is so painful to be in when you can recognize that it's like, I know that this is no longer right for me, but somehow the desire to stay is so strong. And I guess that's the point you're making around like the addiction to the old identity. And you mentioned that in your perspective, that that's trauma. What is that trauma that you're talking to?
Anything that we can think of that has some type of emotional reactivity, not in a way that we desire, we can call it trauma. I think some people would, some people wouldn't. I think we're talking about little t trauma here. But typically what we're looking at is we're not actually looking at our current situation at all. We're looking all the way back, usually into childhood, usually before the age of 7, or in past lives, or in ancestral lineage, or in karmic imprints that have built up. And so all of that we can lump under likely little t trauma. And those things can be cleared so that the current life experience is different. And so what is addiction? It is a way of coping to handle emotional reactivity and the non-acceptance of reality. So it's a way to not be fully present in what is. It's a way to distract ourselves so that we are not actually doing the things that are taking us forward.
It's so, as you were talking then, I was like, I had this sudden flashback to a moment when I, just before I did my breathwork training, which was a long time ago now, and we had done this whole online portion of it, and then we went to Mexico to do the in-person piece. And I was with a friend of mine, and we were both feeling quite nervous. You know, like before you go into a retreat that you know is going to be quite intense, there's like a certain level of resistance that comes up because you know that some personal work is going to be happening. And my friend was saying to me, she was like, oh God, I could just feel myself, like I go into my addiction of just like wanting to eat all the time. And at that point in my life, it was probably like back in like 2021, I was like, I don't really think I have any addictions. And then, comical. And then I was like, I'm just going to do some work. And I was like, my safe place is behind a laptop. And I had never realized, as someone that was like high achieving, did very well at school, good at university, got a great job, that I had this like very safe cocoon that existed when it was just me behind my laptop. And the truth of that was the laptop gave me control because it was just me and this world that I could control. It meant I didn't have to interact with humans. And if interacting with humans is like, I lose control, my laptop is very safe and secure. And realizing that, I was like, wow, this is like, in a way, another thread of the identity of high achiever that is like, I feel safest when I'm working.
Yeah, I always say there are worse vices, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone's coping mechanism, if their vice, quote unquote, is to be productive, to have output, to do problem solving, to work on themselves and find their limiting beliefs and heal themselves. There are worse vices. There are worse things that can be done. We can put people pleasing in that too, right? People pleasing is just another way to control or have a sense of control over other people. I'm going to control their perception of me, right? Mm-hmm. It's manipulative, not in a malicious way, but in a way that feels a sense of felt safety or the idea of safety. And we can learn when we're over-indexing what's actually serving us, what's actually moving us forward in a way that we would like, not just forward in productivity, but forward in life fulfillment.
Yeah, it's like that. I can't remember where I saw this analogy, but it's like when you're focused on being super productive and high achieving, it's like you're climbing up a ladder, but you're potentially climbing up the ladder in the wrong building. But because there's this like obsession with momentum and moving forward and productivity, you don't even realize you're climbing up the wrong building. And then suddenly you get to the top of the ladder and you're like, wait, this is not my house. I've climbed in the window and I'm like in some stranger's house. But it's like, you have to be able to pause to recognize you're climbing up the wrong building. And that can be super uncomfortable to do.
Yeah. I actually wrote a song about that. The lyrics are, just stay and you can climb a ladder you don't know you want and don't know why you're trying. But what's the alternative? To be present, to not be distracted, to not, you know, chaos is another addiction. It's a really good way to stay distracted, because a lot of us who are high achieving and type A had chaotic childhood. So it feels familiar. It feels even safer than peace and rest and ease and unconditional love, because it's like, oh, I know how to handle that. I know how to handle a crisis. I'm the smoothest captain on the ship. I know how to get this done when the waters are calm. You know, I'm just here with my thoughts. I don't really know what I'm doing, but oh, another crisis. I can put out that fire. I know exactly what to do. Then the bigger picture stuff, that can wait, because this is more important. We got to put out the fire. We got to deal with the crisis. So that's a distraction.
Yeah,
that's a distraction. And it shows up in self-sabotage. It shows up in toxic relationships. It's a way, again, to not fully be present.
And it really, like, in my own experience of seeing some of those patterns play out in my own life, for me, it was really a way of like supporting myself to feel useful. So it was like, from a very young age, I was always the like caretaker. Like whenever there was an emotional crisis for someone, I was always the one that was there, because it supported me to be like, oh, like I'm needed. Like if I can be the one that's really helpful in this situation, therefore like I'm wanted, I'm loved, like people aren't going to leave. I'm going to like, I've made myself like the linchpin in this situation that they need me.
Indispensable, important, valuable. All of that's part of this idea of safety and belonging.
Completely. And I think, as you mentioned, it's so common for so many high achieving women specifically to build like an entire life based off of proving worth to a certain degree. And I wonder, like, you've clearly been through your own process of unraveling that. And what is the hidden cost in staying in that identity of the impressive one?
You feel a cost when it's there. So like I said, getting there, I don't think is the problem. I think it's okay to experiment. I think it's okay to go down a lot of paths that end up being not where you want it to be. I think that's okay, you know, to climb up a random ladder or a random tree and be like, oh, pivot, reverse, you know, I think that's totally okay. But there comes a point when you know the cost, when every single fiber of your being and your body is screaming at you saying, this is not right. This is not where I should be. And every day feels like a battle and feels painful. And I don't know what's next, but I know that it's not this. It usually starts with a whisper of not this. Like it just can't be this. I don't know what's next, but it's not this. And at some point, there's going to be an opening. And sometimes it's really dramatic and it feels like this giant portal, which is what happened to me when I decided to stop drinking. It was like, here's this portal that's opening up. It's temporary. It's time bound. You're not going to get this again for a while. It might come back, but it'll be way worse next time you get this opportunity if you don't take this right now. For me, it was that level of, okay, this is my one shot. I can do it now. I can take this opportunity, or I can wait and it'll be worse later. That's what it was for me then. But sometimes it's more subtle. Sometimes it's a buildup over time of, I think I have to take this step, but I don't know how. I think I have to take this step, but I'm going to lose everyone. And I don't know how to be ready for that. But at some point, you are either ready or you just can't do it the other way anymore.
It's so funny because I have been asked this a lot of times by people that want to leave banking, because that was a lot of the work that I used to do. And a lot of them ask, like, how did you get to the point of leaving? Like, what was it that changed? And when you mentioned that piece about the portal, I have this really clear memory of like driving back from my yoga teacher training one like Sunday evening. I used to train to become a yoga teacher on the weekends. And I was in the car and I just looked out of the window and like, it was like a portal had opened and suddenly it was just like, this is no longer your path. And it was so clear. And I had been like battling for years to be like, I know this isn't right. How do I do something about it? I'm scared. Maybe it's the wrong decision. Like that whole loop for a really long time. And it just came so clearly. And in that moment, it was like, oh my God, this is not my path. And it was so clear. And yes, after that, there was a whole process of like terror and all the stuff that came. But that moment of clarity was something that I really anchored to for a long time. And I know, I don't think that happens for everybody, but I think that it made it a lot easier for me in many ways.
Yeah, I've had it a couple times. I've had the slow burn a couple times. One time when I was doing my own teacher training, I was very set on this path that I thought was great, that I'd been working so hard for so long. And then I literally got punched in the face by the universe. That's what I called it later. And it was so clear to me in that moment, you know, I was completely derailed. I had to completely change my plans, but it was so clear to me in that moment. It was like the universe was saying very clearly, not your path. This is the wrong track. You weren't listening. So we're going to get you on a new one.
Mm. Yeah, I do. It's like there were a few times that happened to me. The first, I had two banking jobs at two different banks. And the first one, I was like so unhappy and was really, really ignoring every single sign from the universe. And at the time I played netball, which is a little bit like basketball for those of you in the US. And I was going to netball training that night and I was like rushing because I was always in a rush. And I was like, it was late and like it was raining or something. And I was like, it's the last day. I've got to like do this final. And then I snapped my ankle in that match, like snapped all of the ligaments in my ankle and was forced to be bedbound for like 6 weeks. And I was like, oh, I haven't been listening to myself. Like, this is what will happen when you're not listening to yourself.
Yeah, it can come up in so many ways. It can come up in freak accidents or bills or pain in the body, chronic pain, chronic illness, inflammation, patterns in relationships. Basically anything that says, if you're not listening, we're going to get louder and we're going to get louder and louder and louder until you actually do something. And there's only so much healing that can be done in a situation you're not supposed to be in. Mm. So the point of healing is not to make you more comfortable in situations that you're not supposed to be in. It's not supposed to make unhealthy situations and relationships feel fine. That's not the point of healing. The point is to get you to a place of neutrality where you say, yeah, this isn't the right path for me. I got to go somewhere else.
I love that distinction because I think healing work has become much more popular and much more mainstream. I do think at times it is starting to be used as a scapegoat. It's like, oh, if I can heal my, I can heal my way through anything. Like it's just a trigger. So I can just like heal my way through it. And then I'll be able to not do the scary thing, which is to leave said job, relationship, whatever it might be, have the conversation. But to recognize that it's like, I went for a walk with a friend earlier and we were talking about this exact point that it's like the most powerful healing that I have ever experienced is always the process of coming back to neutrality. Like moving through some form of emotional residue, energetic residue, whatever it is, and coming back to some place of like grounded stillness within myself. And from that place, being able to see.
Yeah. And it's, you know, for people who are extremely high functioning and high capacity and can get through anything and can muscle through anything and have achieved a ton, it's really hopeful to say, maybe I don't have to leave this marriage. Maybe I don't have to leave this job. If I just fix myself enough, if I just go to therapy enough, if I just work on myself enough, maybe I can stay. But like you've said before, it's just another way for us to try to feel like we're in control of things that ultimately aren't controllable. And no matter what, the soul is going to keep screaming until we listen.
And it's really the avoidance of grief. And like, oh God, it's something I've had to sit with a lot because in terms of all of the emotions, grief is the one that for me is hardest to access. Like I've done a lot of work on my rage. I've done a lot of work on my sadness. Grief, I find challenging at times. Mm-hmm. And I do recognize increasingly that like our capacity to feel grief is directly related to our capacity to move through identity evolution. Because if we can't fully meet our grief and the like loss of identity, the end of chapters, the end of whatever's, we have like all of these energetic threads out into like previous timelines that are still in us, and it's exhausting. So I wonder, from what you've been saying, I get a sense that you are better at grieving than I might be. I wonder, first of all, why is that an important part of the work that is not necessarily talked about? Like, we talk a lot about like evolution and growth and da da da, and the fact that actually there's a lot of grief that comes with this is not talked about.
Every change that you make necessitates loss, even if it's a good change, even if it's something that you want. So if somebody is getting a promotion within the same job, they're grieving the lighter responsibilities and the early days and how exciting the beginning was at their old title. If they get a different job, even if it's a better job, they're grieving their old coworkers and the chats that they used to have around the coffee machine and the clients that they had there and just the learning experiences that they went through. Every change involves loss, which is why so many people don't want to do it. And because we're all changing all the time, you know, every single cell in our body is changing all the time, what people are actually doing is they are choosing the old way over and over and over again, instead of allowing themselves to move. And so when we accept that every change does involve loss, the question is ultimately, is it worth it? And there have been times that I've had to ask myself, if I lose absolutely everything, if I lose everyone that I love, everything that I've built, can I live with that? Because ultimately that did happen to me a couple times and I did have to move through that. And so it wasn't that I said, okay, grief, you and I are done here. It's I took my grief with me and I made beautiful things with my grief alongside me. It wasn't complete because it was still reminders of love that I very much valued, of people and things that I built and situations that I was a part of for a while. There's still a lot of love there and I'm still choosing differently and I can do both.
I'm just like breathing that in for a second. And the piece you mentioned around having gone through the loss of like large groups of people and belonging, and was that a direct reaction to certain choices that you made?
Absolutely. So one of the clearest ones was after I stopped drinking, I lost about 70 friends. that was so large. And you know, I tried to keep some of them. And one of them said to me, nobody wants a sober buzzkill around. You know, I'd heard from so many people, oh, no one's going to judge you if you don't drink. I'm like, you don't know my friends. like they're so angry. It's not like I was telling anyone that I wasn't drinking. I just simply wasn't. And sometimes I'd pretend, I'd get a ginger ale and, you know, pretend it was whiskey and be like, I can still hang. I spent my first 30 days in bars and clubs because I wanted to hold on to my old life so badly. I was like, I can do it. I can absolutely do it. But it just wasn't going to work out. So that was one example. After my divorce, I lost all of my closest friends and I ended up staying in contact with my ex. I thought it was going to be the opposite. I thought I was going to lose that but keep my friends. But no, it turned out to be the opposite. And I was really shocked and surprised by that. But it just showed me, again, where I was going, not where I'd been. And so there was grief because there was love. And I understood why certain things happened. And maybe not all of it, but a little bit. And I just took my grief with me and kept making something beautiful.
It takes a lot of courage to like stare that level of grief in the eye and still make the move. Like, where does that courage come from for you?
Courage is feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And for some situations, it was a slow build. And for some, it was, okay, here's the window. It's now or a much later time, and it's going to be much worse then. But ultimately, it was a free fall, a surrender of, I know what the previous path is. I've done it many times. I know exactly where that goes. And I know that ultimately it's not sustainable for me. And I can keep doing it. I can keep treading water. I can keep trying to tell myself it's okay and I can handle it. And I can, you know, keep healing myself so that I can stay even though it's getting harder and harder, or I can take a new path where there is no certainty, where I really don't know what's going to happen. Mm. If the worst case scenario does happen, I've already pre-planned that in my head. I've already been through that so many times. What if something better could happen? It's possible. For me, I would say most of the time, the worst case scenario did happen, but I also lived through it. And so every time I lived through it, I got to remind myself each time I lived through that other thing. I made it. I found a way. I built again. I rebuilt. I can do it again. And I connected with my spirituality. I connected with nature and this planet and with bigger ideas, bigger than me. You know, a lot of times when we are moving through identities, we believe that that's all there is, that there is nothing else. We're so stuck in our bubble and our microcosm where we don't believe that there is another way. So just this example, right? I was a consultant. Everyone was working towards the job that I had. It was the dream life. It was everything that I was supposed to want. And so when I met someone who had never heard of it, didn't know what I was talking about it at all, it showed me there was a much bigger world than the one that I'd been living in.
I had such a brutal reflection, like similar to what you just mentioned about the person not knowing the company that you worked for. When I took a sabbatical from banking, and I remember we were talking, someone was asking about like what everyone did in their normal jobs or whatever. And I said, and then they asked a bit about like what my lifestyle was like. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm in the office at 7 a.m. and then I normally leave at like 6:30 and normally have client drinks. And then I get home at 10 and da, da, da. And there was a part of me that was waiting for the person to be like, that's so impressive that you do that. And she was like, wait, so you just wasted your whole 20s. And it was like the polar opposite response to what I had had for my whole experience being in London. And it was exactly what I needed, because to your point, it showed me, it was like, there is a whole world out there of people with very different value sets. And like what I have chosen may well be in line with what is deemed to be impressive as per middle-class England. But like for a lot of people, it's insanity. And like, what do I actually think it is?
Yeah. And we can look at this, you know, metrics of success across every dimension, right? Some people think 2 kids is the metric of success. What about the people who have 8, right? People think that, you know, a multi-million dollar company is the metric of success. What about billionaires? What about people who don't even use currency because they exchange everything through a barter system?
It's like, what are we optimizing for? I have this conversation with a lot of people, this sense of like, especially when we're making like career decisions specifically, of like, what happens if the questions is often like, what happens if it all fails? Like, what happens if it ends up like, I end up worse off? Like, okay, what does worse off mean? Like, because objectively, I right now am objectively, in inverted commas, worse off than I was when I was at JP Morgan. Like, I am making less money than I was then. Does that mean I'm worse off? I have significantly more freedom. I've had incredible experiences traveling the world and living in different places. I have like wonderful new community. To me now, I am in no way worse off. To a lot of people, I'm sure I would be. But it's that piece of like stepping away from what you have deemed to be success, which I think for a lot of us who have type A vibes to us is money and prestige and status. And be like, what actually matters to me? Like, how am I genuinely measuring myself when I look at myself in the mirror as a human being outside of what the world wants for me?
I might also say, good, be worse off, right? If someone's in a toxic marriage, I wasn't for the record, but if somebody is, aren't they better off to be alone? Even if it doesn't feel as good because they're not getting hugs and maybe, you know, finances aren't as good, or, you know, they're not having the daily conversation and co-regulation and they're in that void that you mentioned, they might say that they're worse off, and people around them might say that they're worse off and be like, oh, you were so much more successful when you were, you know, the power couple, right? Because nobody sees what's behind the scenes. But are they really worse off? I might say, good. Yeah. Be worse off. Be in that void. See what can come next, right? So if someone leaves their very lucrative position to be a new entrepreneur, you know, we have different expectations for this industry, but most business owners don't even have a profit in their first couple years. And so if somebody is worse off having done that, they've tested their curiosity. They've learned. They've been like, yeah, I know what would happen now. If I was still sitting in my cubicle, I'd be wondering what could happen. Mm. What would it be like? What if I could have this beautiful fantasy where I'm just an instant success story? And they probably don't know that their coworkers are looking at them and saying, wow, they really did it. Mm. They really made it. Wow, I wish I could do that. I wish I had the courage to do that. Mm. And then all the things that they learned in their journey, they learned about business, they learned about themselves, they learned about their own resilience and stamina and triggers and all the things, right? I would say be worse off. That sounds a lot better to me.
1,000,000%. Like, I feel like the journey that so many people that I know go on, and I definitely went on, was, I mean, it's nowhere near ended. I don't think it ever ends. It's a continual evolution. But like, the process I've been on since I left that world, in many ways has been extremely difficult, and in many ways has been extremely beautiful. Have I grown significantly in the process? Yes. So again, it all comes down to, it's like, what are we measuring for? Like, my North Star in all of this is like, I really want to live. I really want to like experience the intensity of life and like see what is possible. And if I fall on my face, I fall on my face. But like, I don't want to, I used to have these moments when I'd wake up in the middle of the night when I was still in banking and be like, I don't want to die not having lived. And I now recognize that, like, as much as that was a yearning towards like change and a change in job and a change in identity, a lot of it was actually like a yearning towards spiritual aliveness and like what happens when you connect to like your true essence inside of you, and feeling and being able to like let life move through me. And to me, that only really happens when we start to take risk and we start to move closer to our true version of success.
Yeah. And the thing about risks is that the more you take, the less risky they feel.
Mm.
It's kind of riskier to not take the risks. You know, if there's something that's like sitting in you that you're like, yeah, I feel pulled. I feel called. No one is ever going to understand this. I don't even know how to explain it. It's going to come out at some point. And so it can either come out through the direct path, or it's going to come out through some type of dis-ease somewhere in your life. So you might as well shorten the pain and just go for it and see what happens.
Mm.
Just experiment. You know, we're on this earth playground. We get to go play and see all the beautiful things.
Mm. I love everything you're saying, because I just feel so much like, do you ever look at the gene keys? You're interested mm-hmm. in the gene keys. So one of the gene keys that I have is, I can't remember what number it is, but it's the one that goes from the shadow frequency of seriousness through delight to ecstasy. And wow. I find it like so comical, because I often have to catch myself falling into the shadow of seriousness. And whenever I connect to like the delight of living and just like the hilarity of this whole experience and how it really isn't that, like, it's not that deep. Like, it's like, we're all here to be on this earth plane, experiencing things, like messing up, falling on our faces, trying to find purpose and meaning, giving back. Like, it really doesn't matter that much. And I often think, like, when I was back in the corporate world, not to shit entirely on the corporate world, because I think there's amazing work done there too, but I was so stuck in the shadow of seriousness. Like, I could not find delight in anything. It was just like, go to work, do the thing, da-da-da-da-da-da. Maybe if I had done more personal work, maybe if I had like intentionally connected to delight every day, it would have been possible. But I think I needed a pattern interrupt. And that pattern interrupt for me was like, pull off the plaster or band-aid and see what happens.
Yeah. And it's also the culture, right? You know, misery loves company. I remember I was in a Lyft actually in London, and I was like, oh, it's a beautiful day today. And the person next to me was like, it's going to be bad weather tomorrow. And I was like, okay. It was a bit, my comment was very not appreciated. And so it's like, you know, it's we're trained that way. We're trained, you know, and it makes someone a really good employee to look for faults and look for things that are wrong, because then we have problems to solve and fix, and then we can, you know, be useful in that way. And so then we start scanning our whole life and saying like, okay, what's the problem? What needs fixing, right? Instead of looking for what's actually working, what's actually good right now. And so something that I had to unlearn was this idea of mistake, because like you, I think, you know, I really like to get things right. I really like to have the right answer. And I wanted to do it the first time. And I wanted to get all the good grades. And I wanted to get all the correctness and everything like that. And so I had to unlearn this idea of mistake, because I have cycled through many, many identities. Many of them I have not revisited. And I can't say they were a mistake. Because they all taught me something and brought me somewhere else and had me meet really interesting people and had, you know, interesting outputs and creativity associated with them. How could I say that's a mistake? It all informed everything that I do.
It does. And it also only ever makes sense looking backwards. Like, there are a lot of decisions that I've made. In many ways, I've had a very wiggly path. Like, I studied chemistry at university. Then I went and did banking. Then I studied yoga. Then I did Ayurveda. Then I went into some coaching stuff. Then I did trauma work. Then I did breath work. Like, it's been a bit all over the place. And I look back and it was interesting. I think it was at some point last year, there was something that I was watching and learning about. And it took me straight back to my degree in chemistry when we were learning about like laws of thermodynamics and blah, 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 blah. I was like, it now makes complete sense why I did chemistry, because I have a very skeptical brain. So when I started moving into some of the more spiritual domains, into the energetic realms, there was a big part of me that was like, this is all bullshit. Like, I've lost the plot. I've joined a cult. Maybe I'm going to end up like somewhere bad.
And I've joined many cults for the reference. I left them all. I never drank the Kool-Aid, but they're always like, I have the one answer. And I'm like, oh, I want to know what your answer is. And then I was just like, okay, I'm good to go. And they're like, wait, you don't want to stay? And I'm like, no, I'm good. So they didn't like that. But anyway, continue.
And well, with it, I'm so grateful that I had like my backbone through it all was my chemistry degree, because I was like, a lot of this makes sense. Like, it makes sense. And like, I could connect the dots because of that. I could quite easily have said when I left university and ended up in banking, why the hell did I do a chemistry degree? Like, I'm not working in this. There is zero relevance for having spent 4 years in a lab making things, nearly killing myself and blowing myself up with poisonous chemicals. But it all makes sense in hindsight. And it's just that piece of like, there's an aspect of trust that comes with that, that like every decision that we make, it might not seem like it makes logical sense at the time or even straight away afterwards when you fall on your face, if you fall on your face, but there's always a reason. I talk about this story of like, I went on this hilarious retreat, like probably 2 years before I left my old job. And the woman that was running the retreat was genuinely in the middle of some kind of emotional crisis. Like, I don't know why she was running a retreat. I don't know why she'd invited people into her house, but she was not mentally okay. And I really hope that she got the support she needed after this week. But it was a disaster. Like, the whole thing was a complete disaster. And simultaneously, that week changed my life. Like, I met some people that week that completely changed the trajectory of my life. If I'd looked at it on paper and been like, I went for a nice yoga retreat after my like intense period in banking with a woman who was having some kind of psychotic break, like, it doesn't look like a success. In hindsight, it was like a pivotal moment in my journey that needed to happen.
Yeah, we don't know in the moment what the long-term ROI is, what the energetic ROI is. But all compounds.
And I want to talk a little bit more about your work, because I know that you do really powerful work for women who in many ways are like high achieving leaders and simultaneously feel stuck and unseen and perhaps a little bit flat inside. What are the patterns that you see most often, and what are you helping these women to remember?
Sure. So people usually find me if they're in some kind of transition, you know, wanting to get back to the glory days of their work, the things that they did, or relationship stuff. That's usually where people come in. I would say the patterns are resentment towards mom, stomach problems, an underlying anxiety that's kind of just like a low buzz that's just always there, just being on guard and hypervigilant. And that's usually where they come in. And we, you know, clear their trauma, get them set up right. And then they're like, okay, so what else can you do? Now what? What can we do? And so then we take them from neutral, because that's where healing gets people, is to neutral, and say, okay, now let's expand. Let's do soul expansion. Let's do soul growth. Let's optimize. Let's make things better. Let's increase that energetic ROI so that when you put energy into something, you get tenfold what you put in, you know? And so every time that you're in a situation or with people that you know intuitively, which ones are going to light you up and which ones give you energy versus the ones that are, you know, draining your life force. And you're like, no, I don't need any more of that. Right. And so like, even though these women are so powerful, they can get into, as we all can, this idea that somebody else has more answers or knows better. And so they're actually stripping their power away for proximity to someone that they're giving power to in a certain way, whether that is, you know, in their career, in their relationship, in a friendship, in something like that. And so it's really about basically reconnecting to their inner wisdom, strength, and personal power and connection to their own genius, basically. And so when they have that, when they're intact, what it looks like is that it looks like they're increasing their self-worth, their sense of belonging. And it does increase their creativity and intuitive skills and senses. But ultimately, it's a reclamation where it's like, yeah, life's feeling good again. Like I kind of got off the path for a bit. I kind of felt like I was in a hamster wheel in this rat race, a different rat race, right? I broke myself out of the cage of the old one and then I got in this new one. But now I'm feeling like, right, there's actual possibilities here. And so then they get to feel what they actually are, which is limitless. Freedom.
And if there was a woman that was listening to this right now, because I think a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are similar vibes to what you're talking to. Like someone standing at the edge of their old life, but like terrified to let go, what would you want her to know?
You are more supported than you think you are. And there is always a way. You will always find a way. There are infinite ways to do anything. If you think that's the only way, I promise you it's not. I promise you there's another way. I promise you that there is a better match for you. And it's out there. And you are on a trapeze. And in order to get to another rung on the trapeze, at some point you're going to have to let go of the old rung. And it's going to be scary and it's going to feel like free falling. And you're not going to know where you land. And even after you land, you might feel like you haven't landed. You're looking around and everyone's gone and you're like, what the heck just happened? Deep in the quantum crumble. But I promise you, you will figure it out. There is another way. And you will be glad that you did.
I love that so much. There's a line by Terence McKenna, I think. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. But the piece about like falling off a cliff and finding a feather bed underneath. And I do think that that process of falling off the cliff is absolutely terrifying. And there is a period where it is free fall and you're like, what the hell have I done? And I have been in that so many times. And at the same time, there's this sense of like a much deeper trust in life that it's like genuinely, what is the worst thing that could happen? And I recognize for some people, the worst thing that could happen could be very bad. For the majority of people in my domain, most of us are fine. You know, like if you strip it all back, it's okay. Like there are people, you're not going to end up on the streets. And I think that can be a soothing thought at times when we get, my brain often goes into like absolute fear mongering. And to really strip it back and just recognize that you are genuinely supported both by the universe and simultaneously most likely by some people in your community.
And the way that the unconscious mind works is that it's not actually afraid of being on the streets. It's afraid of death. That's what it's looking at. It's like, are we dying? Yes or no? And the reality is that when somebody strips their identity, they are dying, actually. It is a death. It is a death of an identity. And so that's why it feels like dying. Because to the unconscious mind, it is. Mm-hmm. And so when we show it that actually there is new life, that there is, if not continuity, there's a new way. There's a new way of existing and it is possible. That's how we bridge it.
Yeah. And it becomes easier over time. Like I remember doing some work with a lady a few years ago and she was talking about the process of like actually learning to die. Like, and taking yourself through intentional death portals. And I think a lot of the time that's what psychedelics are used for. Because it's like, okay, you're taking yourself through a death portal if you take a serious enough dose with support, not on your own. And there is beauty in doing that. And I recognize in myself, like I was so so trapped in an identity for a very long time. That one died. And I've been through multiple identity deaths since then, but they become easier because it's been done once. And you know that you didn't die.
Yeah. You get to stack evidence of all the resilience that you already have, all the resources that you already have, and how each time you are building. And so it seems like losing, but you're actually losing nothing because you get to keep all the experiences and memories that you've had. And you get to keep all the learnings that you've done. You get to keep building.
Yeah. It's like plucking little pieces and taking them with you. Remember an ex-boyfriend said this to me when I was deep in attachment wounding. I'm like, please don't leave me, after he'd broken up with me. And he was like, Lucy, we don't rip up the page when a relationship ends. Like, you turn the page. Like, the letters are still there on the page. They're still a part of you, but you've still turned the page and you can glean the bits that you need and let go of the rest. Yeah. I have one final question for you before we close. And I ask everyone this question. What does it mean to you to live a liberated life?
Living a liberated life, I feel in my power, where I'm doing things because it is my decision and I'm taking accountability and intentionality every single step of the way. I'm not doing it because I have to, because I'm obligated, out of duty, because there's something horrible that's going to happen if I don't do it. I'm doing it because it's my intention, and it's because what I planned, it's what I designed, or maybe it came as a nice surprise, but it's something that I am choosing every step of the way, and that I get to create and be in this life in a way that is in presence. It's a life that I don't need to escape from. It's a life that I don't need a vacation from, because my life is the vacation.
I love that answer so much. It has been such an honor to have this conversation with you. You have so much wisdom. Thank you for sharing it with us. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much for having me here.
And if the wonderful listeners would like to find you or find out more about your work, where can they track you down?
Sure. So on my website, my company, Clear Resonance Lab, I think we'll link it. I have some freebies and tasters of ways to get into quantum recalibration, which is what I do, which is essentially energetic recalibration in all the ways to get you more aligned with your life. And then also on Instagram as well.
What's your Instagram?
It is I Am River Ayla.
Beautiful.
Which I actually changed this morning for my fifth brand new handle on Instagram, because I am constantly in flux and changing all the identities.
She's the queen of identity death, people. thank you so much. We will link all of your goodies in the show notes so that you guys can reach all of her magical work. Thank you so much for being here with us. It's been something, and I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.